So following the lecture given by Mireille this morning, now I'm going to present the application of the targeted learning to pharmacoepidemiology. So we've learned a lot of the theory and the assumptions of targeted learning this morning, and now I'm going to focus more on the technical implementation of this recently proposed method, targeted maximum likelihood estimation. So I hope that by the end of this section, we will gain a more concrete understanding of the TMLE procedure, and hopefully this will facilitate your future application when carrying out TMLE analysis. So here is the outline of this talk. I'm going to firstly provide a step-by-step description of TMLE procedure, and then I will walk through some SAS program for the implementation, and moreover, a simulation study will be presented to demonstrate the double robustness of TMLE. And the end, I will use a real pharmacoepidemiological study as an example to showcase the application of this method. So TMLE has been developed for studies with more advanced study designs and data structure. However, I'm going to use a single point treatment study with binary treatment and binary outcome for illustration purpose. So suppose we have a cohort study and we are interested in investigating the effect of a binary treatment A on the outcome of interest Y. And also we have a range of baseline characteristics which are potential confounders identified by the investigator. And we denote this confounder as W, as a vector W. So in the causal framework, we're interested in comparing the counterfactual outcomes or the potential outcomes refers to the outcome of Y in a counterfactual world where every individual in the study population receive a particular treatment, say the small a. So let's mu zero denote the expected potential outcome when everyone in the study population does not receive the treatment, and mu one denotes the expected potential outcome when everyone receives the treatment. So if now we have unbiased estimates for mu zero and mu one, then our targeted parameter of interest can be summarized as a function of these two quantities. So for example, the risk difference is simply mu1 minus mu0, and risk ratio in the log scale is log mu1 minus log mu0, and the log odds ratio is just the difference between mu1 and mu0 in the logit scale. So now let's look in detail how mu0 and mu1 are being estimated in TMLE framework. So overall, There are four steps in implementing TMLE. Step one, we need to have an initial estimate of the probability of outcome conditional on our treatment and the covariate vector W. So we've learned that machine learning techniques such as SuperLearner are advocated in this step. However, I'm going to use a standard logistic regression to illustrate how TMLE works. So if you do have SuperLearner or other machine learning techniques, you can just replace this step with those functions, but then I will just use the logistic regression to show the procedure. So we fit this logistic regression, including the treatment and the covariates in the model, and then we obtain an initial predicted probability of the outcome by the prediction function from this regression. So now we set the treatment A to zero for each individual, and then we can obtain an initial predicted probability of the potential outcomes when everyone in the population was untreated. And likewise, we obtain an initial predicted probability of the outcome Y when everyone was treated. So in the second step, we need a model to estimate the probability of receiving the treatment conditional on the covariate. So again, the standard logistic regression model can be used. And this may look very familiar to you because by definition, this is just the propensity score model. So the estimated probability of receiving the treatment is the propensity score predicted from this model, and the probability of not receiving the treatment is simply 1 minus the propensity score. And we note that the covariates that are included in this propensity score model do not have to be the same as the one we included in the previous outcome model. So step 3 is to update the initially estimated probability of Y. To do this, we again feed a logistic regression, including H0 and H1 as covariates in the model. So these covariates are called clever covariates, where H0 was defined as 1 over 1 minus the propensity score for the untreated subject, and was defined to be 0 for the treated subject, as we see there's the indicator in the numerator. And similarly, H1 was defined to be 1 over the propensity score for the treated subject and 0 for all the untreated subject. So remember, we already obtained the estimated propensity score for step 1, so H0 and H1 can be easily computed. So now let's look at the red part in this logistic regression. We notice that this is actually a fixed quantity for each individual. And it is, in fact, a linear predictor from the initial outcome model from step 1. So this quantity will be used as an offset term in this logistic regression, replacing the intercept. So as I just said, this model is an intercept-free model with the linear predictor from the first step, and then the H0 and H1 are considered as two covariates. So feeding this model, we obtain the regression coefficient epsilon 0 and epsilon 1, and they are referred as fluctuation parameters. So once we get the estimate for these two fluctuation parameter, we can substitute the estimated value epsilon 0 and epsilon 1 to do a new prediction for the counterfactual outcomes for each subject. So when everyone was said to be unexposed, there is only H0 in the prediction function, as H1 was defined to be 0 for everyone. And similarly, there's only H1 in the new prediction when predict the counterfactual outcome for everyone being unexposed. So in the last step, we simply take the average of the prediction to obtain the final expectation of the counterfactual outcomes. And then we already have the estimate for mu0 and mu1. And then it is very easy to get the estimates for the risk difference, risk ratio, and the odds ratio in the log scale by simply substituting mu0 hat and mu1 hat in these equations. So now we have the point estimate, but we would also like to make inference for the parameter that we're interested in. So it is shown that TMLE is asymptotically normally distributed with mean equals to the population parameter and variance equals sigma squared over the sample size n, where the sigma squared is the variance of the influence function for the parameter. And then subsequently, we can construct the corresponding wall type 95% confidence interval p-value as well as the hypothesis test. Well, now you may wonder, what are the influence function for the parameter? Here we go. So in our simple binary scenario, the influence function is actually a function of several estimates that we've already attained in our estimating procedure. So they are derived as the forms listed here for risk difference, log risk ratio, log odds ratio, respectively. And they will be further used in my following SAS program And in semi-parametric framework, since influence function characterize the estimator, so each of the parameter has its own corresponding influence function. So if you are interested in deriving the influence function for any other parameter rather than this one listed in this slide, then I can refer you to some other paper which shows how to actually derive these functions. But here in this talk, I'm just going to focus on these three parameters particularly. So I hope until now you have an idea of how TMLE works. Do you have any questions at this point? I can have more clarification on the procedure. If not, then I will move to the SAS program that I've written for the implementation. There actually are functions doing TMLE, but since most of us are SAS user, I'm going to just introduce the program that I've written. So I believe everyone sitting here is able to develop a program which is even better than this one. But this is the one I have, and I'm going to share it with you here. And hopefully it can serve as a base for your future analysis. In that, you may revise or extend it for your own purpose. So this SAS micro was called Estimation TMLE with five inputs that have to be provided by users. So we specified the name of the data set to be analyzed in the option data set, and then specify the name of the binary exposure variable and the binary outcome variable in the second and the third option. And then we list the covariates name that are included in the treatment model in the VERPS option. And then at the end, we list the variable that are to be included in the outcome model and also the name of the exposure variable in the VEROUT option. So this program follows the TMLE procedure straightforwardly. And firstly, we feed a logistic regression for the propensity score, including the covariates that are identified by the investigator. So estimated propensity score can be obtained by the pre-option in the output statement. So in the following, we're going to compute the clever covariates H1AW and H0W just as a function of the estimated propensity score. And they are later on to be included in the updating model. So in addition, we also compute H1W and H0W, preparing for the final estimation for the potential outcomes. And next, we again feed a logistic regression corresponding to the outcome model. And the store statement here was used to request that this procedure saves the context and the result of this logistic regression into the object Q model. And this Q model will be used later on to do the update, as we will see in a few minutes. So X beta option here is used to obtain the linear predictor from the initial outcome model, and this is added to the data set as an additional column. And it will be used as the offset in this following updating model. This model, as I said, is used to estimate the fluctuation parameter epsilon 0 and epsilon 1. Here we have the previous computed H1AW and H0AW as covariates in the model. And then the intercept was forced to be enumerated by the non-int option. Logit Y is said to be the offset. And then we use the ODS output statement to save the estimate for the epsilon into a data set called epsilon. So up to now, we are almost ready for the final estimation for the potential outcomes. We now prepare two data sets, A1 and A0, as if we are in a counterfactual world where every subject can be exposed and unexposed simultaneously. So we assign the value 1 to exposure for every observation in dataset A1, and then assign value 0 to the exposure to every observation in dataset A0. So now let's look again the formula for the update of the predicting of the potential outcomes. So it basically consists of three components. The estimated epsilon here, and the clever covariates in the counterfactual world, and also we have the first component, which is the offset in the counterfactual scenario. So remember, we already estimated epsilon, and we have the calculated clever covariates in the counterfactual scenario, so the only part what's left is this offset. So now we use a procedure called PLM. This is to attain the first component. So this procedure invokes the saved results from the previous Q model, and then it applies the estimated coefficient and then provide prediction for new data sets, A1 and A0. So now we have the offset term also for the prediction, and they're named as logit QA1 and logit QA0. So we merge the original data set A1 and A0 together. Moreover, the epsilon 1 and epsilon 0 are saved separately into two different data sets. And we have all these three pieces together, and then we are ready to make the final estimation for the counterfactual outcomes. So finally, I use this IML procedure to do all the algebra, updating the probability of the counterfactual outcomes, estimate the parameter of interest, the standard error, and 95% confidence interval. So in this procedure, we need to first read all the data for future calculation. And this is done by accessing the dataset by the use statement, and then we read the columns in the dataset into vectors. And then we write down the expression for calculating the linear prediction for the potential outcome for each individual, and then taking the inverse logit function of this linear predictor give us the final updated probability of the potential outcomes. So we herein just take the mean of y1 and y0 to compute the estimation for the parameter of interest mu1 and mu0. So as for the variance, we just apply those efficient inference function we seen in the earlier slide, and just let SAS do all the computation for us. So this is done for this three-parameter correspondingly. So eventually, we arrived at the very, very last step, putting all the information and the results together, including the pre-specified variable that entered in our propensity score model and the outcome model, the estimate for the parameters in log scale, and the precisions. So after running this macro, we obtain a dataset called TMLE-EST in our work library. So this dataset looks like a table like this. So you can also add other results, for example, the exponential of these effects, the confidence interval, the p-values, just by adding a few lines in the last data step to calculate this quantity. And like I mentioned earlier, you can do any customized change based on this program. So now we know how to use SAS to do TMLE, and you may want to verify the promised double robustness property. Therefore, I carried out a simple simulation study where I generated a binary random variable x1 and a continuous random variable X2, which affects both the exposure and the outcome, so they're considered as confounders. In addition, another binary variable X3 was generated as the risk factor, and then the exposure is generated from a Bernoulli distribution with the probability as a function of the generated X1, X2, as well as the interaction between X1 and X2. And a continuous outcome Y was generated from a normal distribution with the mean as a linear function of the exposure, X1, X2, X3, and also a quadratic function of X2. So we now know the true data generating mechanism in our simulation, and the true exposure effect was set to be 5 for beta 1. So after we have the data sets, we may have different model specification, either in the outcome model or in the propensity score model. So we may have different modeling approaches when we use TMLE. The first TMLE uses the same covariates and the correct form for both the outcome model and the propensity score model as the way how outcome and exposure were generated. But in reality, it is very difficult to know the truth. But we may still have more or less knowledge on the potential confounders, so we may come up with different modeling strategy as following. So suppose we know that X2 affects the outcome in a quadratic way, but we decide not to include the interaction between X1 and X2 in the propensity score model, then we have TMLE2. On the other hand, if we miss the X2 square in the outcome model, but included the interaction of X1, X2 in the propensity score model, we have TMLE3. And furthermore, if we miss both the X2 square and the interaction, then we have the model specification like in TMLE4. And TMLE5 is supposed that we misclassify X2 as a risk factor rather than a confounder. So we may include X2 in the outcome model, but then not in the propensity score model. And then if we consider a slightly worse scenario, we may fail to identify one of the confounder, X1 or X2. Then we end up with TMLE6 and TMLE7. And TMLE8 is just an extreme case in which we fail to identify both of the confounders. So this table presents the results for the simulation study showing the bias, standard deviation, mean square error, and the coverage. So TMLE1 and TMLE2 with the correctly specified outcome model provide unbiased estimate for the exposure effect with minimal mean square error. And TMLE3 also provide a reasonable estimate for the effect because we have a correctly specified propensity score model, although here the outcome model was slightly misspecified as the X2 square was not here. We can see that TMLE5 also provide an unbiased result. Even though the propensity score here is highly misspecified, but now we have a good form in the outcome model. So all the other TMLE provide much more biased results, as neither the models are correct. So when there is no adjustment for the confounder in TMLE8, we get our largest bias and also MSE. So as the simulation result just shown, TMLE provides unbiased result when either the outcome model or the propensity score model is correctly specified. When the initial outcome model was not consistently estimated, the residual bias was addressed in the updating step via the correctly specified propensity score model. And when the initial outcome model was consistently estimated, then there was little signal in the residual or bias reduction in the updating step. So now I will show you an application of TMLE using a real-life example. This study aims at evaluating the effect of statin use post-MI on the one-year risk of all-cause mortality. We used data from CPRD linked with HES, which consisted of 33,792 patients who are older than 18 years old and diagnosed as MI between April 1st, 1998 and March 31st, 2012. The exposure was defined as statin use within 30 days after the diagnosis of MI, and the exposure was defined as all-cause mortality during 1 year follow-up. So the study was restricted to the patients who had at least 1 year data history before the MI to ensure sufficient observational time to assess potential confounders. A range of baseline covariates are predefined as confounder by a specialized investigator who have substantive knowledge in this area. So such covariates include demographic characteristics such as age, and sex, and several clinical characteristics, comorbidities, and previous medication prescribed. In addition, we also use the well-known HDBS algorithm to address the residual confounding in observational studies. So I presume everyone here is very familiar with this algorithm, but just a brief review. This method selects covariates from the large anatomical healthcare database based on the induced confounding bias, and then these covariates will be used to estimate the propensity score along with some predefined variables. So in our study, we specify the diagnosis, procedure, medication, referrals, immunizations, and laboratory test as our data dimension, and then we selected the 200 most prevalent codes from each dimension, and top 400 empirical covariates were selected based on their bias magnitude. So then I defined four nested covariate sets as potential modeling specification for either the outcome model or the propensity score model. So the permutation of these four covariate sets gives us 16 different TMLE. So an empty covariate set includes no covariates, of course. A simple covariate set included a few important confounders, such as age, sex, obesity, smoking, and history of diabetes. A moderate covariate set, W2, included all the pre-specified confounders that was listed in the last slide. And then a full covariate set, W3, included all the potential confounder and also additionally the 400 HDBS selected covariates. So the number of covariates gradually increased from the empty set to the full set. So this is a table showing the results from the 16 different TMLE. So including no covariates in both the outcome model and the propensity score model provide actually a crude estimate, which is -1.2 for the log odds ratio. And then we see that the results move away from this crude estimate as we increase the number of covariates in our propensity score model. And if we adjust W1 additionally in the outcome model, a non-propensity score model also provide a similar result as if the W1 was adjusted in the propensity score model. And if additionally we adjust W2 in the outcome model, similarly we see that the estimate are moved further away from the crude estimate. And now if we look at the last column of this table, all the odds ratio are around 0.7. So the results are all in agreement regardless of the propensity score model we used. So this is the case that we included all the full covariate set W3 in the outcome model. Now let's look at the last row of this table. So the results are again more or less in agreement, except that the standard error is a bit larger. So this is because that when there is residual confounding from the misspecified outcome model, extreme propensity score, although might be correctly specified, still influence the performance of our analysis. And this gives us a little bit of warning when we include high dimensional of covariates in our propensity score model. But however, overall, these results, again, empirically reflect the property of double robustness for TMLE. And we've checked that these numbers in agreeing actually are comparable with a result from meta-analysis in the same topic. So here are just some remarks at the end. TMLE approaches generate marginal effect estimate. So in general, if you are using a logistic regression, the odds ratio are not comparable to those from the standard conditional multiple logistic regression. So this is because the logistic regression used the logit link. So the marginal effect does not equal to the conditional effect, and then we cannot compare them directly. Positivity assumption is also necessary for TMLE, which requires that the probability of receiving any level of the treatment conditional on the covariates to be greater than zero, and it is needed to make any causal inference using propensity score-based method. And in practice, if you have near violation of positivity such that you have estimated propensity score extremely close to 0 or 1, the estimate of the variance may be inflated, as we see from the previous example. Besides HDBS, data adaptive methods such as superlearner can be integrated in TMLE, and in fact, the ability of to integrate data adaptive methods while retaining valid inference is a motivation for TMLE. So instead of using the standard logistic regression for the initial probability of the outcome or for the propensity score model, other models or predictions from machine learning-based methods can be used. TMLE has been developed for longitudinal study to account for time-varying confounding. And in general, it is an iterative procedure. So the prediction of the potential outcomes is updated until epsilon becomes sufficiently small. So in our simple scenario, the prediction of the contrafactual outcome converges just in one step. So we only have one update for the outcomes. However, if you wish to target on a more complicated parameter rather than the mu 0 and mu 1, and then you may need to iterate the whole procedure until you get a very, very small epsilon. So here are some relevant references. And at the end, I would like to give acknowledgement to CNOS and Dr. Platt, Tibor Schuster, Chris, Marsha, and Miri, all those wonderful people for their important contribution to this work. And thank you for your attention. Any questions? Dr. Platt, do you have any comments?
Um, Not right away. I mean, I think the thing to worry about, as I said in the other session, is to make sure you go through the steps of checking the weights, checking the Q model, and making sure that everything is behaving in a loose sense, because if you get too far towards the answer, you may have something that gone wrong along the way that you don't know about.
Right.
The other thing is that without the super learner, if you just do HTPS logistic regression for the individual steps, the computational problems are somewhat reduced relative to what we had when we started with. If you try to do super learning on data sets, on our size data sets at BTNLE, you probably would need to go to the supercomputers and let them run for several days to actually do this. But it's feasible on a laptop as long as you make these sort of simplifying assumptions, simplifying steps to do something rather than something that's not as computational.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I was not aware there's a micro called Superlearner in SAS. But if it is available, then we can easily replace our standard logistic regression by the predictions from this Superlearner or machine learning based prediction. And then the whole procedure still works the same way. So if we don't have further comments or questions, I would like to have Sophie. Sorry? Okay. Oh, no, Pablo?
What's the difference between this method and machine learning? What's the benefit?
So
this is Pablo of machine learning.
The difference between this and inverse probability weighting? Do you want to answer? Or?
Okay, sure. So this is actually a targeted method. So, firstly, in the outcome model, actually, like Mireille said, you can use any other method to just get a very good prediction of the Q. So once you have a good estimate, then the propensity score model doesn't add more information to it. So for example, even the superlearner didn't include the treatment or forget some important confounder, but since you have good prediction, then you're fine. And even though you don't have those covariates, you still have a valid inference for the target you want to estimate, which is the mu 0 and mu 1 in the control factor world.
And then
if there is some sort of misspecification in the outcome model, you may have some residual bias, then you will rely on the propensity score model, and that updating step will address this remaining residual by update the probability. As the IPW, you rely the propensity score to control the confounding to balance the distribution of the covariates across groups.
The target parameter is the same.
Yes, the target parameter.
We're actually fitting, if you want to be strict, Manglad is fitting is estimating a marginal structural model parameter. But normally we do it with inverse probability weighting where you just use the model for the treatment. If this method and some of these other methods allow you to use a model for the treatment and a regression prediction model for the outcome, and this double robustness comes in. If one of them is right, then you still have it.
And it's also applying for the treatment machine model.
It can. It's another... This is the simplest problem, really.
Yeah. Okay.